You are listening to the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show podcast on Gear 30 Radio. Adventure for your ears. Shop Gear 30 premier mountain equipment and improve your outdoor experience.
Gear 30 Radio!
You haven't lived until you've heard the show Americans are talking about. The show that launches its listeners to the height of humanity. The audio hour that travels the landscape of adventure. The sound that comforts more than the clip of your first bolt. It's the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show!
We're Outdoor Adventure Summits the Airwaves. It's the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show. I'm your host, Brandon Long, on belay with you for the next hour. In studio with me in the Gear 30 Lounge, as always, is Todd of the Top. Todders.
Hey. Check three, check four.
Todd is looking dapper this week. I've noticed I've gone through the back last three or four episodes, and every time I introduce you, I compliment you on your beard. So why stop this week? Yeah, looking good.
Yeah, this is compliments.
But the hair
of our own.
Is good because we're beanie-less today.
Yeah, it's getting about that season. I gotta bring out the spring and summer beanies, which are
yeah. We can go year round beanie, right? I mean, it is possible. So
yeah. Hey, I spoke to Tress yesterday. She sends her love.
Did you manage to convince her she needs to take Thursday evenings off to come up here and do the show?
I wish she could. Yeah, I honestly wish she could. But she's doing well. It's good to see her. She got a chance to get up on the mountain a few times this year. So
That's good. Well, this is episode 161, Love Give Utah. We do have an interview with Brandy Bosworth from the Ogden Nature Center and also with Love Give, or a part of Love Give Utah. And I've also heard it, Love Utah, Give Utah, but whatever. News, we have two cyclists were killed biking to work. Not good. Turkeys are taking over Cache County. Outdoor Inspiration Award honors go to Jeff Lowe. Backcountry.com launches Detour. Climber sighted after falling. And climbing gym meets a brewery. Sounds like a pretty good idea.
We need to go there. I would love to.
Into the Wild Moose Hunter shot. Did you see this?
Killed by the cops or something, wasn't it?
It's not good. CV wins Iditarod. Strange. TGR producer survives a Teton backcountry avalanche. Miss Nebraska dissects a shark. And yes, the 5-second rule is real. We can all relax. We'll go over events. Gear 30 NRS releases a spring apparel lookbook. Skill sessions, 5 things you should have in your backpack. And tonight, when you hear this, it'll be too late, but it is the Ultralight Backpacking Clinic here at Gear 30. So be sure to check Facebook and the website, gear30.com, to get down on these Gear 30 Basics classes because they're once a week. They're Thursday nights. Actually, next week's is going to move to Friday because there's a climbing one next week. Intro to climbing. You can know nothing about climbing. Show up to Gear 30 next week. We'll teach you what a rope, what belay is, you know, how to put your harness on, these kinds of things. On Saturday, we'll get you up at the Weber Rocks climbing wall with certified instructors, and we'll get you on a rope, get you climbing, teach you how to boulder with no experience necessary. The following week, we'll go over lead climbing and rappelling and tying anchors, and it's free.
That'd be kind of a fun little refresher. I might join you guys for
that.
I think that might be
exactly
fun.
Especially if you've been out before a few times and you went with a guy who said he knew what he was doing, or a girl who said he knew what he was doing, and you got out there and you're thinking, I don't really know if this person knows what they're doing. The people up at Weber State, they're certified, they know what they're doing. We'll start here at the shop. It's next Friday and the following Friday. And this is leading up to what's coming up here soon is the Ogden Climbing Festival, 7th annual Ogden Climbing Festival.
That's crazy.
Which is a good time. So
the 7th. Do I remember nearly the first one? I don't know. I mean,
it's been a while. Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
So all this and more on episode 161, Love Give Utah. So let's charge.
He summits with the agility of a mountain goat, flashes routes faster than UPS, is more intimate in the mountains than Jake Gyllenhaal. He's Todd to the Top.
We amuse ourselves every week.
Yeah, so two cyclists. This is terrible, and it happens, every year. You know, it's not. The weather's been great. for this early in the year, and so people are biking to work, and unfortunately, friends and family are mourning two fathers who died after being hit by a truck in Lehigh while biking to work. Police say 39-year-old Riverton resident Brian, I didn't catch this on the news, so I don't know how you say his last name. Looks like Berg, and 35-year-old Harriman resident John Coons likely died instantly after they were hit about 6 a.m. Now with the time change, it's still pretty dark at 6 a.m. Wednesday near the intersection of Redwood Road and 2100 North, the 41-year-old truck driver was taken to hospital with minor injuries. You know it's bad if the person driving the car had injuries as well. Friends tell KSL TV the two were family men, loved the outdoors, and they worked with youth in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And Burge is survived by his wife and four children, while Coons is survived by a wife and three children. It's a terrible story. I don't have any news or info as far as the driver is concerned, as if it was just flat out mistake, or if there was some impairment on his part, if he was on his cell phone or anything. I have no idea what's up there, but it's scary and makes me really not want to bike to work. That's
that's a good reminder to drivers too, just to pay extra special attention.
So we have another story here, which I'm waiting for it to open. Wild turkeys are taking over Box Elder. So the other day I get to work and I'm sitting in the stock room here. It's before the store open, and I hear a banging on the window, which I talk about this in the interview with Brandy Bosworth of the Ogden Nature Center, which comes up here in a few minutes. It's banging on the window, and I'm like, who's banging on the window? And I go over to the window, and it's a crow with a rock in its mouth. And it's hitting our window. And this thing meant business. And it didn't see me yet. And so I was watching it. And those things are smart, man.
Crows, yeah. No,
like,
I mean,
scary,
I've read some
smart.
Of the stuff. As far as their ability to remember things, like,
right?
And to make decision. I mean, they're very smart.
So in the interview coming up here with Brandy Bosworth, she talks about just how smart they are. And they're going to do a thing down at the Nature Center about these types of birds.
That's cool.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't let him in because I was nervous. Yeah. He finally saw me and took out. Anyway, wild turkeys are taking over in Cache County. This is hilarious. You know, it's gotten a little too quiet out there. The influx of wild turkeys in this town seems to have dissipated in recent days from the flock that numbered as many as 50 thronging bird feeders and haystacks this winter. Warmer temps have apparently eased their need. Plus, people have stopped filling their bird feeders because of the intruders. But yeah, there was too many wild turkeys there in near Manaway. So the previous winter, they were only numbered a dozen or so, but they think there was about 800 of them out there. 800 wild turkeys. That's insane. So
it's a lot of turkeys getting busy. That's what that is.
Yeah, that's a significant flock. What is a significant flocking of the birds? So anyway, I don't know how you take care of that either, besides giving everyone like a turkey hunting license and saying,
I have no idea.
Yeah, so the 2014 Outdoor Inspiration Award Lifetime Achievement recipient was, of course, Jeff Lowe this last time. He raised $7,000, which the proceeds will go towards Jeff Lowe's Metanoia. We have been talking about Metanoia for a while. Yeah, 4 years maybe. I hope this film gets made finally. They've raised money for it a few times and
done a lot of the filming already for it.
Done. So outdoor legend Jeff Lowe is honored with the Outdoor Inspiration Award Lifetime Achievement Distinction at a special ceremony at the recent 2014 Outdoor Retailer Winter Market event in Salt Lake City. During the event, the outdoor industry rallied during a silent auction to be used to complete Lowe's current project, the Jeff Lowe's Metanoia, narrated by John Krakauer. Auction items included signed memorabilia, photographs, books, and gear. So a sneak peek of the film left viewers amazed by the efforts and the accomplishments of the legendary alpinist and ice climber, which is sweet. So hopefully they get that thing made. Because it's been too long. It's like after a while, either get it made or put it on the shelf or something. I don't know. So backcountry.com, you know, everyone knows who they are. Big outdoor retail player in the industry in Salt Lake and Park City. They came up with a new concept to do what's called Detour. Detour is a new outdoor adventure marketplace that connects you with professional outdoor guides. It's like Craigslist for ice climbing guides. Think of it that way. Detour lets you quickly and easily hire a local professional guide across the U.S. so you can enjoy the best skiing, climbing, mountain biking, hiking, fly fishing, and more. You browse through different, you know, 100 outdoor adventures and book your trip with just a few clicks. So as far as backcountry.com is concerned, I think it's brilliant for them to do it. They said our passion at Backcountry is to be at the center of our customers' outdoors lives by providing savvy gear advice and helping enthusiasts get the goods. That's Jill Layfield, CEO at backcountry.com. And then Detour sets the brand apart by offering tailored, locally guided excursions that are unique and unrivaled. So you have that to look forward to. More information, detour.backcountry.com. And they keep spreading their wings down there and coming up with new fun stuff, which is...
It's cool to follow what they're working on, yeah.
Yeah. Clyburn was cited by authorities after a dramatic Linville Gorge rescue. So on Monday, 23-year-old climber Jackson Pugh... P-E-W? Pooed in the fall, suffered severe injuries after a fall while climbing at Shortoff Mountain in Linville Gorge, North Carolina. As is usually the case with the mainstream media coverage of climbing accidents, details surrounding the accident are unclear. One report stated that he was rappelling and fell 20 to 40 feet, while others referred to him as a mountain climber. We know this happens when, say, somebody falls up at waterfall, the waterfall canyon here, and someone is, say, just messing around on the rocks and they don't have any climbing equipment with them and they fall. And then you read in the local write-up, climber falls on water, you know, and it's like, I don't know if they were a climber per se. So, but WSOC-TV states that, now they changed the last name, Depew. That's different than just Pew. Yeah.
Depew.
Severely injured his pelvis in the fall when he landed on a ledge just a few feet wide when his climbing anchors gave way. So the clearest description of the incident is from a 911 call by a witness to the fall. He states that the victim was a few feet above his piece of protection when he fell, hit a small ledge, and then continued to fall to a larger ledge where he stopped. So this person was obviously rock climbing. He also suggests that the victim had some buddies on top to help him. Details are wishy-washy, but what is clear from the video of the rescue is that he landed on a ledge and was unable to self-rescue and was extracted by a helicopter. So he's reportedly in good condition at a hospital, but apparently they charged him with something, and they issued a citation to the civilian rescuer for disorderly conduct. EMS workers stated that the civilian helper stalled their rescue efforts by 15 to 20 minutes and that rescue workers are trained to use their own gear, suggesting that they weren't using the civilian rescue. I mean, this just becomes a mess when you get into some of these situations. And it's like, if you see it happening, let the rescue workers do their job.
Exactly.
Yeah. Did you read this article about the gym that's opening with... inside a brewery?
Yeah, anything that's beer related, I got this.
You got this?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's like, I own this one.
Well, this is also where I need to go as soon as possible. I think it's a great pairing and it's a great idea. And I'm sure that they keep an eye on the not too
on,
much
on
of the one
level of intoxication
the other,
exactly. Before you climb. You have to have some rules there.
Indoor rock climbing, obviously, bigger and better every single year, right? Perfect way to release your inner monkey after a long day at the office and it's catching on. Just last week, the impressive Stronghold Climbing Gym opened at the brewery in downtown Los Angeles. Obviously, L.A., any of that Southern California coastal area. What's two things that they do a lot of? It's fitness and...
play guitar on the beach.
Play guitar at the beach. I was going to say drink adult beverages, but yes. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Maybe a little surfing too, yeah. The historic Edison Company's number 3 steam power plant, built in 1904, is now home to a state-of-the-art facility that includes a 42-foot climbing walls with hundreds of routes. The gym's also equipped with a 2,000-foot mezzanine with weights, cardio, pull-up bars that overlook the bouldering areas. Yoga class is also available. The outdoor climbing market is not growing leaps and bounds, but gym climbing has a very strong growth rate. Something like 1,000 people a day are starting to sport climb, according to the research.
I'd believe that. Yeah, 1,000, that's not really that much, but especially across the nation.
Yeah,
probably more than
sure
that.
That's a gorgeous facility. I'd love to check that out.
Yeah, buddy. Well, is this the picture that they put on here? This is from outside.com. I wonder if that's of the gym or if they just pulled a... Well, that says Getty Images, so who knows.
Yeah, I think it's a climber.
They just pulled
a Mick climber.
Yeah, so what about
the beer
there?
I don't know if they're
using
the facility.
Yeah.
Like the brewery facility. Or, you know, I don't know where the crossover comes in. Trust me, I will investigate this story more.
We may have to send you down
if I need to research it for, say, a weekend. That's fine with me.
Yeah, we'll jump you on a plane here real quick. Into the wild, moose hunter was killed. This is weird. Gordon Samuel, 52 years old, was killed on Sunday in an officer-initiated shooting surrounding a drunk driving incident in Wasilla, Alaska.
And I think the story certainly wouldn't have made the news other than the fact that...
This would have been, like you said, what was it last week? It's Tuesday in Wasilla. You
know, like, just kind of weird. Drunken happens. Stuff happens
but
up there.
But this guy has a little folklore behind him. So in 92... Samuel became a part of the Alaskan folklore when he found the body of Christopher McCandless while on a moose hunt near Denali National Park and Preserve. Everyone remembers Christopher McCandless as the youth who dove into the wild and didn't make it back out. Samuel was prescribed, and then there's the movie, you know, that's Samuel was described as a passionate outdoorsman, but also someone who had lived a troubled life. So late Sunday night, Samuel was involved in a police chase after he was reported for drunk driving. Following a sustained pursuit, police units ultimately surrounded him, and he sped off towards an officer approaching on foot. Never a good idea. So the officer and another trooper opened fire on the pickup, killing Samuel and injuring the other male passenger. Could you imagine being the other male passenger? Like, dude, stop the car.
Please stop the car.
Stop the car. Samuel had been under court orders not to drink because he's had... DUI arrest. He had it back in September, and he picked up a couple of hitchhikers and crashed into a ditch on the roadside while drunk.
That's another thing to think about, hitchhiking. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, never. Yeah, you don't know the politely turn it down when you notice they're intoxicated.
You see some 40s in the passenger footbed or something. Yeah, exactly.
And a shotgun because he's just been moose hunting.
Exactly.
Or a rifle. Sunday night marked the end of the nearly 30-year criminal history for Samuel. So it didn't sound like he was necessarily great for society. 92, he was with a group of three moose hunters when they found McCandless almost 3 weeks after he died. According to John Krakauer, when the hunters arrived at the old Fairbanks City buses, a couple from Anchorage were already there but stayed back because of the stench and the unsettling SOS note. Yeah, that'd be freaky coming upon that. So it was Samuel who eventually discovered him sleeping in his sleeping bag. Because he's like, I don't care. I'll go walk in there. I'll go find him. Yeah, he was tipsy at the time. Do you watch a show? Is it? I don't know if it's on. It's on one of the main five channels I watch. From Animal Planet, Discovery, History.
Yeah.
Travel. I think that might cover it. But on one of those shows... They've got this Alaska race show, which at first I thought I'd really like, but now it seems so staged and corny. And they've got these three different teams. They've got the mountaineers and the military and the endurance team. Mm-hmm. And they have to reach these different checkpoints
is this
in,
one
in Alaska.
Naked?
And no, but that's coming
that's
up.
A different
and that's
one.
Actually a really good show.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's really good. But
like another season of the
new
Naked
one,
in
yeah,
the
new
Wild.
Yeah, the new one gotcha. Naked and Afraid. Naked and Afraid is that one. And yeah, this is off subject, but just watch. They did like a replay of last year's, and it's so good.
I might have to check it out.
They have to survive 21 days, I think, so 3 weeks. And the interesting dynamic is that these people claim to be survivalists. And I think the producers purposely let some slip through the cracks who aren't necessarily that good at being survivalists.
So we got something to
see how well they'll either merge with or not their partner. And, you know, and they partner them on purpose to see, you know, some might be good, some can't stand each other, and they're naked, of course, and they have to survive, and they got to figure this thing out. It's pretty interesting. So, anywho, there's this show that's in Alaska, these checkpoints. Well, the Seavies are on the team. They're on the endurance team. And unfortunately, it feels like that show is so staged. I just had to quit kind of watching it because there's a problem. Those, yeah. I mean, they're always dumping out of their raft, and something's always happening, and I can't tell if it's real or not, and I'm like, I don't know anymore. So anyway, but the Seavies are famous for winning the Iditarod, and sure enough, Dallas Seavey, the son of the dad who won multiple times, Dallas Seavey crossed the finish line at the 2014 Iditarod dog sled race and wondered why so many people had stuck around to see the third place finisher. So Seavey soon realized he had unknowingly passed leaders Jeff King and Ili Zirkel sometime during the night. So he won this year's race in a record 8 days, 13 hours, 4 minutes, 19 seconds, a fitting end to one of the most challenging races in Iditarod history. Seavey beat out King, Zirkel, and his dad, who's still racing, Mitch, for his second Iditarod victory. So Dallas took home his second victory. King started the final 77-mile stage nearly an hour in front of Zirkel and some 3 hours in front of Seavey. But a storm hit on Monday night, and King's sled was blown into a pile of driftwood roughly 26 miles from the finish, and he was unable to gather his team. The dogs refused to run. He waited there in the storm for more than 2 hours before waving down a snowmobile and then scratched from the race. Could you imagine you're that close to the finish on this 8-day race? Zirkel decided to stop at his safety checkpoint 22 miles from the finish line. So close. She had passed King but had no idea. With a hurting dog team and frostbit hands, Zirkel stopped to wait out the weather for more than 2 hours. Meanwhile, Seavey chose to push his young dog team through the storm for experience, thinking of years to come. This will help them be tougher, I guess. I don't know. And he sped through the safety checkoint as the rested Zirkel watched him go by. I wasn't in a big hurry. I was racing for third, Seavey said. I was telling my dogs, we've done our work. You guys have done a good job. Let's go home. And then he gets to the finish line and finds out he won. Took home a $50,000 check and a new truck for finishing first. So a little bit of drama there. And the Iditarod that's unfortunately not covered as much by SportsCenter as it probably
should be. It doesn't really. No, you find out a little bit right before, and then afterward they cover just a teeny bit. Yeah.
TGR. Super. I mean, this guy lives in the backcountry. He's the producer of all their movies. Greg Epstein. He was caught in an avalanche and seriously injured Sunday afternoon while skiing in the Grand Teton Park's backcountry. He's 43 years old. He was about to drop into one of the Air Force chutes near Jackson Hole Mountain Resort when the fracture occurred. The slide swept him more than 1,000 feet down the mountain, according to a press release. Which reminds me, I'm a member of the selection committee for the Utah Innovation Awards. And Black Diamond has an entry into the Utah Innovation Awards. It was received an outdoor retailer award, the Jet Pack or Jet Force Pack, and they use a fan and battery versus compressed gas to open the airbag. Mm-hmm. For avalanche airbag, and it's pretty awesome. So we got to vote on that. Petzl had some entries. They had actually the helmet that this guy's wearing in the picture right here, this orange one, the Scirocco helmet, that was one. Their lighting that read tells you how far away things mm-hmm. are, you know.
Yeah.
I can't remember what they call it, some sort of special lighting. And anyway, that was there. And then there's other less outdoorsy items, like a cell phone charger holder thing, but somehow ended up in our category. And then there's
2014.
Yeah. Well, and there's another one that was pretty cool. It was a sprinkler system that is on the cloud, and you can jump on your cell phone, and it monitors the cloud. It monitors the weather from the cloud, and it determines whether or not you should be watering your lawn because it's raining and where your house is, and maybe you're on vacation.
That's pretty cool.
And yeah, that's pretty sweet. Yeah,
that is pretty cool. Yeah.
And all you do is plug and play. I mean, you take your old thing off and put this new one on there, and you plug it into Wi-Fi, and you tell it a few things, and you're good to go. So
that's pretty cool.
It's fun. Utah Innovation. There's some innovative companies here in Utah. That's for sure. So anyway, I was just this story, you know, avalanche safety, avalanche.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about that.
Jackson Hole Ski Patrol arrived at the scene about an hour after the incident where they stabilized Epstein and transported him 400 feet to the bottom of the chutes. From there, he was airlifted to the hospital. He's a well-known photographer, and his companions had already made one backcountry run that day. They're expert skiers, extensive knowledge of the area. They all had the proper safety equipment. They had beacons, probes, so It's been an especially dangerous avalanche season across the West. As we all know, a backcountry skier died in an avalanche in southern Colorado on Tuesday, raising the number of people killed by slides this winter to 19. Things have been much better in our mountains the last week, though, which is good. I pulled up this. I don't really know why I pulled up this story, but it was on a hook and bullet, as they say, a hunt and fishing website. I found it. Mm-hmm. Miss Nebraska dissects a shark to promote science education.
Wow. All right. Miss Nebraska.
She's 3 minutes late, and Miss Nebraska plops her makeup bag next to a bottle of extraction fluid. She bobby pins a crown to her head, her blonde curls, and hurries to the front of the crowd where a dead shark and the overwhelming stench of formaldehyde await her. And then, I didn't notice this before, which is hilarious, the rest of the story is blacked out. I was going to read it. It's gone.
Well, that's great.
That's all you get to know, is she was there. She's ready to do her thing, dissect a shark. I think I read there was a link. There was something that led to it. Oh, my gosh, there's the picture. Yeah, she's got a crown on her head, and she looks scared to death, and she's dissecting a shark. Oh, my gosh. Anyway.
Good for her. Good for her. That's a nice thing.
Good news. This is the best news of the year so far. Potentially the best news of my life.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm ready.
The five-second rule is real. The five-second rule is one of those laws that prevails through our formative years, though science has generally accepted the idea that within 5 second window, any food dropped on the floor is fair game for consumption, it hasn't actually supported it until now. New research from Britain confirms that time actually is significant in the transfer of bacteria from floor to food. So researchers, this is, gosh, I wish I would have been one of these scientists. It would have been so much fun. For the Aston University, they dropped toast, pasta, biscuits, sticky sweets, and they waited from 3 to 30 seconds. They found that moist foods are most likely to follow the 5 second rule. Toast can sit for much longer than pasta. However, and if you're going to drop your toast, the best place to do it is on the carpet. But you want to thought that? That's at least the least likely surface to transfer bacteria over any period of time. Tiled and laminate flooring are not so safe for your food. So think about carpeting your kitchen. Consuming food dropped on the floor still carries an infection risk, as it's very much depends on which bacteria are present on the floor at the time. However, the findings of the study will bring some light and some relief to those people who have been employing the 5 second rule for years. So it's not just a myth, which is...
That's good to know.
Yeah,
I'm gonna keep doing it. So
yeah,
but I think it always depends on what. Like I like the picture of this little ice cream cone. Like that's gone. Like
it's, the ice cream cone.
The cone is good.
Doesn't
Maybe
work
a
so
little
well.
Bit of that ice cream is still unsafe, but some of that's not coming up. It's like a cooked spaghetti type thing. That's gonna be tough.
I have a 4-year-old now. She's getting big. Made her some peanut butter toast, like her favorite thing, peanut butter toast. It dropped. Yeah, peanut butter side down, of course, because it always does. And before I could even say anything, she like 1 second ruled it, right? Like, oh, that's good, Dad. In the mouth, down. I mean, you can't. There's nothing you can do. She's got it picked up, and you're good.
Thing is, though, think about it. With the peanut butter, she used science.
You've got a layer there of protection that stays on the tile, and then I have to go clean
what
that part
she, up. Yeah, because what she picked up, Brandon, untouched by the tile floor. Yeah.
So
she knew that when she did it. Daddy, it's fine.
Yeah, it's good. So we had Brandy Bosworth in here yesterday from the Ogden Nature Center, and she was chatting Love Give Utah, which is a one-day rally to support nonprofits in Utah. And you'll be surprised when she tells you how many nonprofits there are in Utah. There's a lot. And this is one day that you can they just kind of all gather around, and there's a party at Roosters. So she'll talk about that on March 20th. And we have that keyed up here. So Todd, I'll let you play that.
You are listening to the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show podcast on Gear 30 Radio. Adventure for your ears. Shop Gear 30 premier mountain equipment and improve your outdoor experience.
Gear 30 Radio!
So So we have in studio in the Gear 30 Lounge, I think for the first time since we left the radio station, Brandi Bosworth from the Ogden Nature Center. Have you? Good.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'll have to go back and look at it. Sweet. Well, good to have you back. We're just hanging out here on a Wednesday afternoon wearing tree hugger shirts.
I taught the trees class at the Nature Center this morning, so I got to be in my uniform.
Okay, yeah. Well, and for to the elementary kids, right?
Yeah, we had first graders from Plain City Elementary learning all about trees.
That's good.
Yeah, coniferous, deciduous, how to make paper, what kind of trees are native to Utah, all those good things.
So I just found this out because on the show I was researching some news the other day, and they went, Congress decided to change our state tree.
I saw that. Some kids said, what's up with the Colorado spruce?
What's up with the Colorado spruce being the Utah state tree? Right. So I don't know what it is now, but it's
Did they go with aspen?
Yeah, you might be right.
Because don't we have the largest standing aspen grove in the world?
Which I didn't know that
82
either.
82 acres.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So that's good. Yeah, no longer the Colorado tree, spruce.
Whatever. Yeah, good move, Guff.
So we're coming up on spring. I bet you guys are hopping down there at the Nature
we're
Center.
We're hopping. The chorus frogs are starting to do their thing. We're seeing, of course, geese pairing up and setting up their little territories and lots of spring activity. It's a great time of year.
That's I'm assuming there's no snow on your premises either down there.
Gone.
It's all
gone. Really dry.
Okay. Well, good.
I think it's that time.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's just going to be that kind of year.
Yeah. Let's talk about some events coming up. It is springtime. Time to build some birdhouses.
Yes. We have our 21st annual birdhouse competition coming right up. And birdhouses are due the end of March. So March 24th through the 29th, you can turn in your birdhouse. And this is a competition for everybody, whether you're a skilled woodworker or a Boy Scout or a family. We just are encouraging folks to build birdhouses of all shapes and sizes, but we do encourage environmentally friendly materials.
Well, and they get creative with those. I mean, what's some of the most crazy you've seen? Like, they use all kinds of
materials. One that has lasted forever is this big ceramic cat that has a wide open mouth and a fork and a knife, and he's just waiting for that bird to fly in his mouth. But that's been on our trail forever.
Yeah, that's
funny. And it's ceramic. But we have mosaic birdhouses, you know, all metal, core tin, birdhouses that are built from all stuff that's been gathered from junkyards that are beautiful works of art. So a good variety.
Yeah, small, large.
Yes, there are a few size stipulations, but it's all on the website.
And then when do we find out who wins and they're displayed for how long?
Sure. So we have a reception on April 9th, and that's when pretty much everyone who enters the competition comes, and we have a big first exhibit and showing that night and a slideshow, and we give away cash prizes to in all kinds of categories, but to every age group. So we have adults and we have children, and then we also have what we're calling a group or family category this year, because we had some kids that were getting more help than others, and we're just kind of separating that to even the playing field. And so everybody feels good, but we want those. We want team efforts and we want individual efforts too.
And some people might think, oh, it's kind of courting your birdhouse. These things are awesome. When you go
they
down and check
awesome.
Them out, they're amazing.
Yes. So on our trail at any given time, we have over 100 birdhouses. And so last year, I think we took in 75 new entries. So we kind of weed them out. The ones that are weather-worn and kind of falling apart go away each year, and then we bring in a new batch. Mm-hmm. And the artists that build the birdhouses are welcome to sell them at the end of the season, and they get all of the proceeds from the sale go straight to the artist. So you have the opportunity to earn a prize, sell your birdhouse, or you can donate it to the Nature Center for our trail, or you can take it home at the end of the exhibit.
So can you have too many birdhouses?
Our trail, the kids just love it. The school children that come and they count them, they ooh and ah over all the different styles and shapes and sizes. And we can't personally have too many. Some people might.
Well, sweet. So then there's other events coming up that you're involved with. Let's talk about this Love Give Utah. This is pretty quick here, 3/20.
Yes. So Thursday, March 20th is a huge day statewide. It's called Love Give Utah, and it's a day that all nonprofits in the state are going to be on social media, online, and out in the community too, raising funds for their organization. But it's really, you hop online, you go to Love Give Utah, and find the organization that you care the most about, and give a small or large donation of any size. And really, for the Nature Center, of course, if you appreciate open space, nature education, wildlife preservation in our community, we support all of these things, and funds are donated to certain projects that are happening at the Nature Center. For example, right now we're trying to extend a brick path around our muse, mm-hmm. that house our birds of prey, so that the handicapped can get all the way around that exhibit. We're also doing a project for outreach so that our education programs can go out into schools, out into senior citizen centers, just out into the community, and broaden our educational reach, things like that. So it's a big day, and it's easy to do from home. You can hop online to donate. Again, it's Love Give Utah.
Do you know how many are participating?
Statewide, there's over 400 nonprofits.
Oh, wow.
It's a big day. You'll start to see it. If you're on any kind of social media, you will see Love Give Utah everywhere.
Sure.
I think in Ogden alone, the city of Ogden has over 44 nonprofits.
Oh, wow.
Participating.
Well, so this is just a one-day rally, basically, to get everyone to find your favorite organization and donate.
Exactly.
Okay.
So specifically for the Ogden Nature Center and our sister organization, which is Weber Pathways, we're doing a party for Ogden's Outside. We all love Ogden's Outside. And our really very good friends at Roosters are hosting the party. So we'll have it at Roosters on March 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. Roosters is going to be providing free appetizers, and Shane Oscathorpe will be there playing some tunes for us. And then we'll just have a good team there. We're making crazy outdoor party hats, and you can come down, have a beer, drink, whatever. And just you can donate there, or you can hop online yourself and donate. But it's all to just support Ogden's Outside, Ogden Nature Center, and Weber Pathways. So just come make a direct contribution or hop online and do it, and then come and party with us. We'll also have some of our birds of prey will be there live.
Which they're beautiful.
They're beautiful.
There were some up at the Winter Trails Day, and they were fascinating to see up close.
Yes. So we'll have some owls for sure. I'm not sure exactly which birds we'll bring, but we'll have some there that night. So people can get an up-close look at some of our birds of prey.
Now, change the subject a little bit. On the birds of prey, do they get spring antsy? Can you see them?
Oh, yeah. They start building nests and doing what birds do in the spring, for sure, even right in their muse.
So we had one of the little, are they crows around here, the little blackbirds around here?
Yep.
I was by myself early here this morning, and I could hear somebody rapping on our window. I thought, well, this is weird. So I went over, and it was one of those crows with a rock in its mouth hitting our window, because the window goes all the way down to the ground over here. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that bird is going to break through. What is he doing? So I guess he was looking for nest building materials or something, but then found the rock.
Curious to know what he did with the rock. So crows, ravens, they are corvids.
Okay.
They're part of the corvid family, and they're smartest groups of birds in the world.
Like scary smart.
Scary smart. Like if you give them six tricks to perform to get the treat in the end, they'll perform all six in a row and then get the treat. I mean, study after study on how smart corvids are. And actually, I'm glad you brought them up, because we are having a class on corvids on Wednesday, March 19th. It's our Wild Wednesday program. And we have Kronk. He's our really crazy raven at the Nature Center.
Those guys get huge.
He's a big boy, yeah.
Yeah.
He's big, and he eats pancakes. Jeremiah's restaurant brings some pancakes once in a while.
Awesome.
And anyway, he won't be out of his cage, but we'll be in his cage teaching about ravens. And that'll be fun. It's Wednesday, March 19th at 3:45.
Well, that'll be fun to watch, because they're big birds, and they look at you, or at least when you look at them, they look like they're thinking the whole time. Like something's going on.
I watched this thing. I don't know if it was NPR. Where, anyway, it was about how they recognize people. And if you look at a lineup of crows, you can't recognize one from the other.
Right. Yeah,
but if you
I
look
can't.
At a lineup of people, a crow can pick out that person.
Wow.
And they did this study where they watched the behavior. And if, like, a person was mean to them or threw something at them, their behavior reciprocated.
No kidding.
Yeah, so they recognize people.
So don't be mean to ravens.
No.
Because you know where I see that happen is in Yellowstone in the parking lots, and they're huge up there.
Yeah.
And they'll come down and try and grab somebody's food that they left on the car or whatnot, and then the people get mad and try and shoo them away, and they're not afraid.
No, they're not letting that go.
Yeah, no, they're not. They don't back off at all. They're scary up there. So they're great. Not quite as big down here in Ogden. But I thought that was pretty wild that he was taking a rock and hitting our window with it.
Yeah, they use tools. So he could have been using that as a tool for something.
Sure.
Hard to say, but I'd like to watch that.
I tried to get a picture of him, and then he caught me, I guess, a glimpse of me and flew away. So, well, that's good. Love Give Utah, 3/20/14. That is also, there's a party at Roosters. The Roosters will be supplying some appetizers. There'll be some music right there in the atrium. So you can make an outdoorsy hat and donate to one of your favorite nonprofits, whether it be Weber Pathways or the Ogden Nature Center. So hang out there. And anyway, it's open to the public. Anyone can stop by.
Yep, absolutely. Okay. We want all of Ogden and beyond to come and support both the Nature Center and Weber Pathways.
I noticed you have a hashtag on here, #OgdenNatureCenter. And you guys are on Instagram. So we can follow Ogden Nature Center.
We're Instagramming. We're just getting started there. So, yeah, absolutely hop in and give us some love there, too.
Sweet. All right. Any more spring events?
Do you know, just so much coming up in the spring. We always have Earth Day. This year it's on April 19th. That's big.
That's coming up.
If you'd like to come out and pitch in at the Nature Center, we have a big volunteer planting day, Saturday, March 29th. And we're going to be planting bare root stock, which is chokecherry, snowberry, and hawthorn, just to help provide habitat and restore the natural setting at the Nature Center. This is good for individuals, families, groups, and if you're interested in coming, just contact our volunteer coordinator, who's Jenny Frame.
And how many acres do you sit on out there?
We have 152.
Holy cow.
It's a big little island in the middle of sort of industrialized Ogden.
Yeah.
It's surprising once you're on the Nature Center property how wild it is.
Well, yeah, and like you said, I mean, you pass some, depending on where you're coming from, the industrial park, and then all of a sudden you're in nature there as soon as you make the turn into the...
Exactly.
It's weird.
I know. I look out, my office window overlooks a meadow, and always I see birds of prey hunting in the skies, and deer in the fields, and lots of songbirds always at the Nature Center. So for being such a small space, it just shows what a little protection can do.
Sure. And then you guys always in need of volunteers?
Volunteers are always welcome. This time of year, if you're interested in helping curb the invasive weed spread, which is just rampant in this all over, actually, we can always use your help digging Dyer's Woad and pulling other weeds too. But also, if you want to claim a garden spot, you can do adopt a spot and just work in some of the more tame beds that are native water wise beds.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think my mom's interested. I'll send her down.
Yay. We'll take her.
Yeah. She's good at that stuff. So
she might appreciate you volunteering her for some weeding, Brandon.
I'm sure. Yeah. I'll tell her the address is at my house and it counts for the Ogden Nature Center volunteer hours. Well, that sounds good. Lots of good stuff coming up. I appreciate you coming down here to Gear 30 and having a chat with us. Anything else you wanted to add before we take
Always
off?
Fun. Just please join us on March 20th for the party for Ogden's Outside. We'll be at Roosters from 5 to 8. Hope you can come.
All right, good times. Thanks, Brandy. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I will sleep in if I can.
So, yeah, Brandy Bosworth sitting here yesterday. She's awesome.
She really is good. She's real deal.
Have some events coming up. Like we mentioned earlier, tonight is the Gear 30 Basics Ultralight Backpacking. They're every week, folks, so don't miss out on the Gear 30 Basics classes. Except for next week is going to be on Friday because it's climbing. Ogden Nordic Moonlight Glide is tomorrow night, which we just looked at the moon out here. It's 7 o'clock, 5 to 7. The moon's up already, but it's not very dark outside, so I don't know. I don't know if they go at like midnight or what, but yeah, the Ogden Nordic Moonlight Glide, I'm sure it's the last one. Also tomorrow night at the Ogden Nature Center, and she didn't mention this, but it's the Garbage Warrior movie night. I
Garbage Warriors, the name of the film.
Garbage Warriors Unite. Tomorrow. On March 18th is the last Wasatch Citizen Series Wolf Mountain Skimo Race. I had the privilege of emceeing the Powder Keg last weekend. It was my first experience at a ski mountaineering race. Good times. Those guys are mutants. They're freaks of nature, and they're amazing athletes, and they're fun to watch. So you can run with the mutants on March 18th, and you can participate in the Citizen Series or the Recreational Division up at Wolf Mountain. Race number 3, 7 p.m., so it'll be nice and light outside. It'll be fun. Love Give Utah at Roosters is March 20th, 5 to 8 p.m., so the atrium will be open. Members from Weber Pathways, Aug Nature Center will be there, and they'll have free appetizers, so hang out. March 27th is the Ogden Nature Show with guest Scott Hyme, the ultra runner, which they made a movie of his fastest known time of completing the Colorado Trail, which is Running the Edge, and that'll be the next night. You can watch that at Piri's Egyptian Theater, Running the Edge, the Colorado Trail film. He went a ridiculous amount of miles. It's like 400-something miles, and or I don't know, but he did a lot, and he set records, and it was awesome. And he had someone follow him with a camera, and so you can watch the film on the 28th. On March 30th, it's the Snow Basin First Annual Burger Challenge. We talked about that challenge. That sounds like a good time. And then April 5th, Strider's Winter Racing Circuit Half Marathon. You start at the Beehive Homes in Ogden Valley. April 12th through 13th, Snow Basin Totally 80s Weekend. Get your feathered hair and stonewashed jeans and go skiing at Snow Basin. April 12th through 13th. And then on the 26th is the 30K for the Winter Racing Circuit, which is the last long run before the marathon. If you're looking at getting some new paddle gear this year, NRS released a spring apparel lookbook. So you can just click on or search spring 2014 apparel lookbook, and you can check out all of the women's sun protective shirts and insulation, and then like their immersion protection shirts, as well as the men's, and they even have lifestyle like hoodies and things like that. So we'll carry NRS here at the shop, not so much their apparel, but a lot of their equipment. And then yep. We have Prana here for summer and cool. So we'll keep everyone cool this summer. Also, five things you should have in your backpack. This is now the reason I didn't look at this yet, because I pulled it up from KSL.com. So we'll find out, like, what does KSL know? What is their suggestion?
Let's see how legit KSL is.
Maybe they know way more than us. So, five things you should always have in your backpack. And there's a picture of people backpacking. And the one guy has got a scope on his backpack or a rifle, I can't tell, and a rope. So let's see here. Number one, a Steripen. Whether you're backpacking or knitting sweaters on the couch, you got to survive without fresh water. So you need a Steripen. So we sell those here. Iodine tablets, whatever. But they say the Steripen is a backpacker's best friend. The lightweight, like 3.8 ounces, purifies using ultraviolet light to destroy bacteria, viruses, protozoa in water in a matter of seconds. Steripen. Number two, first aid kit.
Okay. All right.
One thing that makes backpacking truly awesome is that you never know what might happen on the trail. You might get injured. So a good first aid kit's absolute and must in any backpack. Now, I would suggest everyone in the group have their own mini first aid kit should you get separated from the person who has the giant first aid kit. So,
good point, yeah.
Yeah. Include moleskin, antiseptic wipes, antibacterial ointments, medical tape, fabric bandages, some tablets of over-the-counter medications like ibuprofen and histamines. That's huge because you might not get hurt, but you might run into someone else who's hurt, which is, you could be a hero, basically, if you have your stuff with you. A backpacker's camp stove. Number three, if you think that cooking is a luxury when you're out in the wild, unknown, think again. While you can't pack the kitchen sink, you can pack a kitchen stove, sort of, a small compact stove. MSR makes them. Optimus makes them. They're great little stoves. They're super lightweight, 2 ounces maybe. You can boil water in a matter of minutes, so there's nothing like a good bowl of dehydrated potato soup after a long day on the trail. Headlamp.
Headlamp.
Number
absolutely
four.
Absolutely,
on the trail or at home. There's nothing quite as useful as a good headlamp. Not only are headlamps generally lighter than flashlights, they're also more convenient. and we've talked about Petzl's light technology.
I got one in my bag right now. I think
I have one in my car, in my day pack, exactly. In my, like, I call it my school pack, but it's the one I bring to work every day. And then we keep them in a closet in the house so that when the lights go out, we know right where the headlamps are, and the kids run around the house with the headlamps on, and it's a good time. Finally, number five, GPS. Uh-oh, that didn't go over well.
No, that's the new school way.
Yeah, it's
the
new school.
Used to be map and compass.
I can take a GPS. I take a GPS with me every day.
Yes, you do. Yes, you
on
do.
On my wrist. Thank you, Sunto. Uh-huh. You might be the Ferdinand Magellan of the backpacking world. But if not, a good GPS is an essential piece of outdoor gear. While it's easy to find a lightweight GPS that'll slip nicely on your neck or around your wrist, thank you, Sunto, a GPS watch is a great option because you'll always have it with you and you need it. Not to mention its multi-purpose use. So, pretty good.
That's a pretty good list.
Yeah, pretty good list. So, it was written by a journalism graduate from BYU, Kristen. She has an experience writing in a variety of fields, including art and culture, health and fitness, financial and real estate services. Kristen has written for USA Today, SF Gate, and The Knot.
Kristen got a little plug.
Who knows where she... Yeah, but she did great with this. This is good.
That's a pretty good list. Yeah.
That's your 10 essentials narrowed down, I mean...
Five.
To fun. Yeah. So there you go. I think that's all I have for this episode. Am I missing anything?
No, I got one final, like a transition.
You have the actual Outside magazine instead of just pulling it offline.
You got a pretty good selection here in the last...
Yeah, not bad.
So this is out of January's Outside Mag, right? So they did a piece on what makes us happy. This is a great article, by the way, absolutely. But this goes along with what I think we should do in about 10, 15 minutes. Meaning, go get a drink.
Slack water.
Yeah, okay. So this is number 13, I think, out of their list of, I don't know, maybe 20 things to make you happy. Turns out that moderate drinkers, people that imbibe no more than 14 drinks a week. Okay, I did that math too.
But
I know you're doing 14, it in your head right now.
14 drinks a week.
That's two drinks a
day. If
you
do it in one night.
No, not exactly.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so they consider moderate no more than 14 drinks. I'm under that.
In a week?
In a week, yeah. Do you do two a day? But if you missed a day, and then that makes up. You have two.
No, if I decide I'm feeling like a Pepsi and rum, I usually don't have more than three, and it's usually not more than four or five nights a week, so I'm pretty much right at 12
See,
or
right,
14.
Right around right. 14, right? Anyway, those that have no more than 14 a week are healthier and happier than abstainers.
What?
Yes.
Prove it.
A 2012 Boston University School of Medicine study tracked a panel of middle-aged men and women for 14 years and determined that moderate drinkers had fewer chronic conditions such as cardiovascular disease and cancers and higher levels of HDL, the good cholesterol. More surprising still, the study showed that quality of life actually went down among those who curbed their intake. Other research demonstrated that beer and liquor are just as good for you as wine. And then cheers to that. Yeah.
So that's why the rum is always gone.
Anyway, so
in a good mood
for sheer happiness reasons, we definitely
outside
need to go
out and
that
drink, is the what makes you happy episode issue
exactly.
Of outside. Yeah, perfect. So this week's quote of the week is, "I found your love like I found religion in an aluminum trash can in the middle of the Utah desert." Jared Kintz. I don't know who he is, but he wrote a book, and that was the line, and it had to do with Utah. So Love Give Utah, which is on March 20th. Make sure you're there. Go to Roosters for free appetizers. Thank you for listening to the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show on Gear 30 Radio, adventure for your ears. Find the OOA Show podcast on iTunes and gear30.com. As John Muir would say, the mountains are calling, and we must go. Keep blowing and lightning across the we undiscovered.